Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yeah, all right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I'm enjoying all the questions. I'm enjoying all the pictures, getting them from texts and from other places. Greg, your moth. Greg sent me a beautiful picture of a moth. It's black with these kind of fuzzy things on its leg and a kind of a slender body and yellow and white windows on its wings, spots. Very pretty. I thought it looked familiar, but I looked it up. It's the eight-spotted forester, which is a great moth. The eight-spotted forester. It's a pretty common moth. I see it because when I've seen it before, I've seen it around muscadine vines and Virginia creeper. Which are closely related in a way, and it hosts both of them. So it is a moth that's caterpillar eats grapes. It's probably not bad to curb the growth of Virginia creeper, or even muscadines, which can be pretty prolific in our climate. They are minor pests in some places. I doubt there'll be a pest in your yard, but that's what that moth is. Billy Bob in Fairhope sent me some incredible pictures of his well-prepared beds, and I will tell you who prepared them for him. It's the best way to have your beds prepared. It was his little dinosaurs, and they have done a beautiful job. He's getting ready to plant. That's a beautiful-looking bed there, Billy Bob. The question about report, and I should have in my head translated that, and it's quite obvious what was meant. Is it time to repot lime trees and hibiscus? Looking at these pictures, yes. You know, wait on the hibiscus. I think you're probably okay with the lime. When you repot these plants, they need warm soil or they won't really respond to regrowth. So, yes, it's time in the sense that they are struggling with those pots. I think they're with pots that small, you almost have to change the soil every year, or you're going to have to increase the size of the plant, the pot. But I would repot them both. I'd probably repot them in the same pot, but just shake off some dirt and put in some new soil this year. Or put them in a slightly larger pot. You can pot them up a size, would be another way to do it. But wait until you can give them plenty of sun. And I might wait a week or two. There's no need to hurry that right now. Let's wait until the soil, till the ground, till the air is warm enough that it'll keep those pots warm so that they'll immediately respond with new roots. If they struggle with cool soil for too long, even in containers that can stay a little too cool for too long, it can be bad for the plant. So I would hold on to it for just another couple of weeks and then repot when the air temperature is a little more stable, when the night temperatures are a little more stable. What am I missing? Some other questions? Great pictures from Jim in Georgetown a beautiful, beautiful sunset. And let's see, lots of other questions. We're going to get to them here in just a minute. Chickasaw plum question. That's a tough question, Jim. I'm going to think about it. They're not biannual. They're not. They don't have off years. I don't think that's a problem. I have problems with plums. I have problems with plums in general, and even Chickasaw plums. I think that Chickasaw plums may require some winter chilling. And in years in which there is insufficient winter chilling, we may not get good Chickasaw plums. It doesn't take much, but it is my guess, based on the fact that people on the immediate coast, don't always do as well with the Chickasaw plums, that some years it just doesn't get cold enough to have good production, I'm thinking. Don't have proof. Don't have scientific proof of this, but I'm guessing. Dan, thanks for holding on. What's up?
Hey, Bill. How you doing this morning?
Good.
Great. I had a quick question. So I'm trying, in the pursuit of expanding my garden to get more and more for my wife and I to eat, and we've done great and lots of vigorous growth, and I've combated against stink bugs and different pests in the past, and I'm trying to get more into permaculture, if there's any kind of perimeter planting or anything, obviously knowing that it's not going to prevent all pests, but maybe deter different pests. I've seen mint. Does that actually work, or is there any kind of perimeter plants beyond just to attract beneficial insects, or what would be your guidance there?
Well, I don't think mint is going to prevent any pests from coming into your yard. I do think that mint, and this was a, you know, we did a little show on this a couple of weeks ago. What I think is that flowers like mint, I'll be careful to describe what kind of mint here in just a minute, but flowers like mint flowers, attract a wide variety of insects, and a high percentage of those are going to be predatory insects. So it's the predatory insects attracted to the flowers that form the barrier, if you will, for other insects. They are, and not so much a barrier, but they just, you know, they're out there eating the stew out of the pests. So the mints are a great thing to put not directly in your, you don't have to put them in your vegetable beds, but a perimeter bed, if you like, that could work really well. Now, there is the trap crop perimeter bed. And honestly, I understand the theory of trap crops, and I should probably use them more. And I think they could work pretty well for stink bugs. So one of the things you can do with a perimeter bed is to find a plant that the stink bugs really love. And one of the things they really love are tomatoes. But there's also belladonna. Some of the other native wild solanaceous plants that are related to tomatoes, and I'm going to think nightshade. There's some nightshade weeds that attract stink bugs very well. Have you ever seen a little weed that has kind of broad leaves and it has little black berries on it that are really glassy and smooth, and it comes up as a weed in your yard?
Mm-hmm.
That is a nightshade. It's related to tomatoes, and the stink bugs love it. And the young, they'll put young stink bugs on there. They'll lay all their eggs on it. They really love it. You can use that as a trap crop, and that's another way to think about a perimeter planting. So you can get some of those weeds coming up there. You just have to go through and check them. When you start seeing the little stink bugs on there, you're either going to need to spray those plants with some kind of pesticide that you can live with, or you could use a vacuum cleaner and just suck all those little suckers up. That's an interesting way of doing it, is to have a trap crop that they're very attracted to. So those are the two kinds of perimeter plantings that I think work. I don't think there are really good barriers in terms of plants that are absolutely adequate to really stop pests. Fall armyworms sometimes move across the ground, and sometimes you can stop them with barriers, but not really plants so much. In fact, plants really aren't good barriers for armyworms. So, Dan, am I answering the right question?
No, you definitely did. As far as just a deterrent, I hadn't even thought of a trap crop that you mentioned there. And one last, I guess, follow-up question to that is obviously with plants, I've had issues in the past with rabbits in particular. Anything beyond just your standard fence, and generally I've planted on my fences that are lattice, like a New Dawn rose, so it's a bit of a bramble, or like a, was it, Vandertramp's rose or something like that as well?
Yeah, you remember Brer Rabbit says, don't throw me in that briar bush. Just don't throw me in that briar bush, because he loves the briar bush. So the brambles aren't going to work very well. Rabbit's okay. Rabbit's got that figured out. So here's what I do, and it works pretty well. I take chicken wire and I roll it into a roll. I just make a roll of it. I've done it with 3 foot and 4 foot. I think it's probably better to get the 4 foot high chicken wire, and I just put it into a roll and put it around the perimeter of the areas that the rabbits are going to. Sometimes I don't even do it on all sides. And they do not like crossing that roll of chicken wire. Can you envision what I'm saying? You just literally make a cylinder out of the chicken wire. Take the top to the bottom and tie them together. And the cool thing about that is that you can roll it around and mow under it. So you don't have to worry about making another fence. And it's easy to do, and it's not that expensive, and it's really quick. And it has worked for me several times with rabbits, and they do not like jumping over it. They don't like going under it. It's very confusing to them, and it's too wide. It works.
I'll have to try that. Well, thanks. I appreciate the information, Bill.
All right, Dan. Good to hear from you. All right, folks. We got to take a break. Is that right, Charlie? Yep. And we're going to be back. It's a busy morning. It should be, boy. We got a lot to do, folks.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, we're ready. It's a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. Lots to do, lots of questions to answer. I'm thinking about them all. I'm getting all of them. Dan found the Longleaf book. Which is more than just to make pretty. I agree, Dan. But it is a beautiful cover. And the cover is beautiful, Dan, because my wife took that picture.
Is this the book you wrote?
Yeah. It's our great Longleaf, Far As the Eye Can See, a really beautiful book with incredible photographs. And eventually you get around to reading the text. But the photographs are incredible. It really is, what a great picture of Alabama, what a great picture of the Gulf Coast, what a great picture of Longleaf that book is. It's just really, really, I think it's a book I'm proud of, not so much for my effort, but for the effort of everybody who went into that book. It's beautiful, beautiful book.
You wrote that, what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Oh, gee, Willie. That was...
I know it's... I think it's since you've been
2012 doing this show. Was... Yeah. I think we finished... we actually finished the book. So it's been a while. It's been 8 years.
Well, I ask, is it still available?
It is in its fourth printing.
Wow.
It has been a big... may I say, I have a new book that I'm working on the contract on. It's another Longleaf book, but it will also lead to other books as well. And
awesome.
So we're working on that. So Dan sends me a picture of another pine, and if you haven't heard me say, I love pines, and the world loves pines. Sometimes we here in Alabama, which is one of the great centers for pine diversity, don't appreciate our pines the way we should. We somehow think that, you know, International Paper or Scott or Kimberly Clark invented pine trees. Well, they didn't. They took advantage of one or two pines that were out there and made a mess of them sometimes. I agree. But, man, when they're beautiful, they're beautiful in their right place. They're incredible. We have 7 species of pines in Alabama. Maybe we're going to find another one or two. I wouldn't be shocked if we did. But we do have seven, and they're really cool, all of them. I just get excited about all of them, even Virginia pine, and I'm learning to love Virginia pine. Listen, that one of the pines that we have down in Midtown and towards downtown, and I saw them today on the way to work, and they're just lovely. They're so beautiful. They're so tall. They are such a beautiful contrast to the live oaks, which are so squat, wide and squat, and these beautiful upright pines. For the most part, until you get out on the hills, as soon as you start climbing the hills, right above, right out there on towards Cottage Hill and Spring Hill and coming up towards Airport towards Azalea, and then you're on the hill. But as soon as you start climbing that hill, you'll see longleaf. There's some remnant longleaf. But most of the pines in Midtown are actually what we now call slash pine. I call them the Gulf Coast pine or Caribbean pine was an old name for them. But they're beautiful pines. They're incredibly beautiful pines. They do better, I think, in Midtown than probably any other pine. They're well adapted to those wet soils and the high silty soils in Midtown for the most part. There's a few places where longleaf can work really well too. But I think for the most part, those slash pines are beautiful. And so Dan is asking me about flat topping of pines, and just because he knows that I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about it, because I love to talk about this kind of thing. You know, it's a funny thing about trees, and this is good to know. And a person who worked with me on the Longleaf book and a good friend of mine and a mentor, Rhett Johnson, once said to me, you know, longleaf reaches its ultimate height at about 50 years, and then it just continues to get bigger and bigger around, and that's the truth. And it's mostly true. It's rare that trees do a lot of height growth, and this is true for most trees. They actually don't do a lot of height growth as a percentage of their growth after about 50 years. So they achieve their ultimate height very quickly, and then they begin to lose the what we call apical dominance. They lose the sense that one part of the tree, one central part of the tree, is going to keep growing taller and taller and taller. Now, this is an East Coast phenomenon in places with high lightning strikes, and places where there's lots of high winds, These are things, and plenty of moisture. There's no real need for those trees to keep getting taller and taller. They begin to do something called flat topping. And they do it in various ways, in various stages. Some of the slash pines, when they're really flat topped, and they can flat top as much as any tree, they just look like they've been sheared across the top. It just looks like a big platform on top. Really cool looking. And longleaf will do it too. I would say those trees still have some apical dominance because you see they kind of have a rounded crown there, Dan. And yes, they're slowing down. They're probably not going to put on a lot more height growth, but they really haven't achieved that final flat top quality that slash pine, when they get really mature, will achieve. And let's hope that that tree survives long enough. It will probably not be wind that takes it down. It'll probably be root damage and other things that people do to it in those urban situations. But it's not quite flat topping, but it is reaching an age where it's not going to get a lot taller. And it's already pretty tall. It's just going to keep expanding slowly, and the diameter is going to keep expanding on the trunk and getting more and more beautiful. Slash pines are good trees, folks. They're good trees to have in your yard. They're good, and you can call me and ask me about those pine trees if you like, and which ones are most suitable for your yard. We do have a caller, Charlie. Tree to plant, but not crepe myrtle. Boy, that gives us lots of room to maneuver here. I'm listening, Bill. What's up?
I would like to plant something small in my yard. You know, something between the street and the sidewalk, maybe. I don't want a big tree. I don't want to have oaks falling over on my house because they don't have enough dirt like they happen on Georgia Avenue.
Yeah. So how wide is the space between the sidewalk and the street, Bill?
I'd say maybe 6 feet, something like that.
That's good. That's good space. That's good space. And you're talking about Georgia Avenue, you're saying?
Yeah, you know where I'm talking about, where the oak trees just fell over because there was no dirt underneath them?
Right, right. Oh, you don't want that like that. You don't want a situation like that. So have you got any shade? Have you got any shade out on the street, or is there a lot of other trees there?
No, just the power lines.
Yeah. So we do want to plant something that will grow under those power lines. So there's lots of choices. Boy, there's lots of choices. And there's a lot of small hollies that would do really beautifully there. If you wanted winter berries, you could plant a lot of the smaller hollies. You could even plant citrus there. Amazingly enough, I think there'd be some citrus that would do really well.
Yeah, that would be good.
That would be really nice there. There's fringe tree, which I love. I love fringe trees. I think they're the most beautiful trees. They just make me so happy to see a fringe tree in full bloom. Grancer graybeard is the old name for it. It would be perfect for a space like that. Silver bells would probably work there okay, too. They would probably be nice. I could keep going. There's a lot. That's a lot to go on. Any of those strike your fancy? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm gonna skip on the holly because it runs so bad.
Not if you get the right holly. It depends, but yeah. So okay, let's don't do the holly. Not all hollies run, but we won't have to do a holly if you'd rather not. So let's do a deciduous tree, and I would say the fringe trees. I would say some of the citrus could work really well. You don't want to get them on a dwarfing rootstock. You want to be careful that it's not too dwarf a rootstock. In Midtown, even a citrus that would be really beautiful would be the Don't do that to me, brain.
Satsumas, oranges.
No, it's the citrus that. I'll think of it here in just a minute.
I'll be here when you think of it.
Yeah, that's right. I hope I'm still here when I think of it. But I'll think of that. But so some of the citrus could be really good. And you know, there's another tree if it's full sun. If it's in a full sun situation. And there's another tree, which is chaste tree, which a lot more people are planting along streets, and they do very well in those street side situations. Chaste tree have these
chaste.
Yeah, just like just like your I'd have to tell a bad joke or something, but right. Chaste tree, chaste.
Okay.
And
I see along the side of the highway where the city mandates which trees you can plant.
Yep.
They have these little scrub oaks, I call them, little short ones.
Oh,
they don't
man.
Get real big. What are those?
They're some great oaks. And if you can find, now let me tell you about some oaks that would work really well there. If you
little
could,
bitty ones.
Yeah. And they don't like wet soils. I'll have to say this.
Oh, okay.
They
well,
don't
I'm
like
real wet.
Yeah, so if it's a wet soil situation, I wouldn't go with the dwarf oaks. But there are some great oaks for places that don't have really, really wet soils. So I didn't mention those for that reason. But, gosh, there's some great ones. Blue Jack Oak is one of the most beautiful oaks you could plant, and it gets to maybe 30 feet tall. And it would be a long time before it got there. It's really about a 20, 25-foot tall oak and just absolutely beautiful. But I'm not sure I would feel good about planting on silty soils in Midtown. I wouldn't recommend those. But,
all right, I'm gonna pick through this and see what I can find. Last part of this is I was looking for the trying to think of the name of the non-spreading bamboo you used to talk about so much.
Oh yeah,
what was it?
So there's a bunch of them, but they're all in the genus Bambusa, B-A-M-B-U-S-A. B-A-M-B-U-S-A. All of them that are Bambusa are clumpers.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that are, and then it's a question of which is hardy and what size you want. The easiest ones to find, and they are really fine bamboos, is Bambusa multiplex, M-U-L-T-I-P-L-E-X, Bambusa multiplex. And there's a lot of great varieties there. I love Alphonse Carr. It's a cultivar of Bambusa multiplex that gets about 25 feet tall. It has yellow and green striped trunks. It is absolutely beautiful in a garden.
What's the name of that one again?
Alphonse Carr. And
like
it's
a man's name.
Yeah, like a man's name. A-L-P-H-O-N-S-E. And I think
C-A-R-R?
And I think the last name is K-A-R-R or something. Okay. I think that's right. Alphonse Carr. And it is a beautiful bamboo. Bambusa right. multiplex. And I highly recommend that. It's beautiful.
Okay. And they'll put up with the wet environment.
Yeah, not excessively wet, but yes, they are growing really well in my soils in Midtown. I wouldn't plant them in a loblolly. I wouldn't plant them in a puddle. But as long as they get a little bit of drainage, they're going to be fine.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, you're welcome.
Put something along the back fence there.
All right.
All right, I got some great ideas. I appreciate it.
All right.
Oh, and where would I get these trees?
Well, that's another question. We got to take a break. And I thought of the name of this tree, so if you want to hold on, we'll come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening, and we've got lots of questions to answer. Bill was asking me about trees to plant, and I had one of those brain blips where I was trying to think of the name of a tree. Let me state the name of that tree. One of the things we don't do as well as we could is to use citrus well. And there are some great and beautiful citrus that could be used for street side planting. I know that sounds crazy weird, but it's not crazy weird. They are evergreen. They have many of them have beautiful form. They have beautiful flowers that are very fragrant, and they have these. They're covered with these little orange ornamental balls, and they can be really beautiful. Calamondin citrus, C-A-L-A-M-O-N-D-I-N. Really is one of the great ornamental citrus. It is beautiful. The fruits are actually delicious. I love calamondin. They're very tart. I learned to love calamondin when I was in the Philippines, where I was served calamansi juice, and it's just the best lemonade in the world, except it's better than lemonade. It's calamansi juice. It's delicious. You can use calamondins for lots of things. They're tart, they're lemony, but sweeter than a little sweeter than lemon, but absolutely delicious. And they make beautiful trees. And I think we've achieved a climate, particularly in Midtown, where I think these trees are going to be fine, and I think we can mostly recommend them without any concern to be street side. So calamondin are very good. Bill, the other thing that I didn't mention, and I mentioned fringe tree, and I mentioned chase tree, and I mentioned silverbell, and I mentioned some of the hollies, which that's okay. I don't want to steer you that way. They can be harder to find. The other thing that I didn't mention that's really good for that kind of situation can be some of the palms, and they can be a lot of fun. They're just really great for those kinds of situations. Sometimes the electrical people don't agree with me about palms, but the palms don't cause them any problems in their power lines, really. The palms tend to arch move away from the power lines. So they're great. And you can get a short palm or a tall palm. There's lots of them. Where do you find these trees? And this is going to increasingly be a problem. It's something I can't fix things. I need your help to fix some things, and I need a lot more of your help to fix things. One of those things that we need to fix is we don't have good sources of plants for the Gulf Coast. You can go to Home Depot and Lowe's and to the places that imitate Home Depot and Lowe's, and you can buy a wide variety of plants that grow real well in Fort Wayne, Indiana, but you're going to have a hard time finding the plants for here. Look at your local nurseries. Look at A Bloom. Look across the bay at the locally owned nurseries there. Those are important. Those locally owned nurseries. The Mobile Botanical Gardens has been a source for plants that you could not find in other places because nurseries couldn't, for one reason, it didn't fit their models or it just was hard to do. The Mobile Botanical Gardens has a spring plant sale, and a lot of these plants will be available at the spring plant sale. So we hope. Now, this is where I need your help. If you are going to have a wide variety of plants and you can take my advice on these plants, you're going to have a place that can provide those plants. And one of the great public services of having a botanical gardens is it can provide plants that are suitable for our climate. Right now, the city of Mobile has not been generous to the Mobile Botanical Gardens. They're working at it, and I know there's some issues, but right now we got a problem, and you would not believe how difficult it is for people to work there. Because it's just not enough money to operate the situation or to even take home a decent pay. People work there for free when they can't afford to work there for free. So we've got to support the Mobile Botanical Gardens. We've got to do it in lots of ways, and we need to encourage our council people to support the botanical gardens in every way they can. And we need to support those sales, too. They're important, but they will not keep the botanical gardens alive. The sales are a service to you more than they are a benefit to the gardens. And but they're going to have a sale coming up in March 21st. I think it is somewhere around there. I don't remember the exact date, but it's that third week in March. Be ready for it. Get ready for it. There should be a lot of good plants available when that happens. We got lots more questions. I'm going to have to read quickly and get back to you. Beautiful pictures here. Beautiful pictures here. Boy, I got so many pictures coming. I can't get to all of them. It's sending me a picture of a big guy. It's probably a slash pine. I'm going to try to get a little closer on that one, Dan, and try to figure it out. Beautiful pictures. Where did all these trilliums come from there, Dan? My girlfriend's mom saw these near a creek bank near the house down in Irvington. Now, isn't that interesting? Wow. Way down to Irvington. That's remarkable. I'm surprised. So the trilliums are, the first one that you got a picture of is a trillium. I'm going to have to look at it a little closely before I tell you exactly what kind of trillium it is. The mayapple is the second one with the little white flower. What an interesting creek. What an interesting place. I don't know this place down there around close to Irvington, but it sounds very interesting. Sounds very unusual to find these plants around Irvington. Probably the farthest south in the county that I've seen them. Or heard of them occurring. Very interesting. Must be a little calcium there. Must be some kind of weird marine soils that they're growing on. It would be a very distinctive place, this creekside. Gosh, I hope it survives. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Which mint was best for attracting beneficials? And this is a good point, Rob, and thanks for holding my feet to the fire on that. So one of the things, and when we talked about Dan, the other Dan, when we talked about mints, I want to be careful that a lot of the European mints don't do well for us, and they're okay for beneficials. But I want to talk to you as soon as I get out of this little break here. I want to talk to you about what some of the other mints would be that would do really well for us.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Dan, you freaked me out sending me those pictures and telling me they were down around Irvington. Campbell, Alabama makes works. That's more of Red Hills plants, and those are so the same names apply. May apples and trilliums. The trillium is probably under woody eye, which is kind of our Gulf Coast trillium, but it does not get as far south as Irvington, as far as I know. There are some places in North Mobile County where I think it may grow. But it grows along the edges of the Delta, along the bluffs there. In fact, I know it does. So it's a great little trillium, really cool, beautiful trillium. I think that one is under woody eye. That's my guess. That's my best guess. Up at the hunting camp, and boy, that was gonna drive me crazy for a while there. I'm glad you fixed that. So some other questions here. Carol in Bay Minette was asking me about growing plants in the shade. You know, it is shade has to be used wisely. Carol, I want to talk about that, and I will tell you, shade is a double-edged sword. One, yeah, it can reduce daytime temperatures, but daytime temperatures aren't the problem here. The problem is the nighttime temperatures. That's what's hard on the plants. And shade doesn't change nighttime temperatures. What shade does do is it stops plant from getting energy from the sun, and that's how they live. And so if you have it becomes very difficult to grow things in shade a lot of times. It's just the only time that shade really helps plants is between about 11:30 and 3 o'clock. Shade earlier in the day, shade later in the day, not a good thing. And even most of the year, even during those times, the shade is not a good thing from 11:30 to 3 o'clock. But during the midsummer, that can be a good thing. But, you know, Carol, you need to call me. We need to talk about this. It's going to take a while to sort of sort that out. Dan asking about can you start longleaf from seeds? Yes, indeed you can. The pine cones have tons of seeds, but they have shed their seeds at this point, and it's going to be very rare that they have any seeds at all. So you want to catch the pine cones at just the right time, sort of like any fruit. It's a little different kind of fruit. It's a cone, but it's like any fruit. It has its maturity. And just before those cones open up, while they're still green, but just, you know, that's the time to collect those cones and let them open up. Kind of usually around September, October is a good time to collect green cones and let those open up, and it's pretty easy to get the seeds. And you'll probably see the seeds falling. We can go into more detail on that, but I don't think you'll find any seeds this time. And Gene, I'm listening. What's up?
I got a big pine tree. It's been in my yard. I've been here 54 years. I'm just curious as to what kind of pine tree it is. It's about 10 foot in circumference, and it's about 60 foot tall. It's got little small pine cones on it. You have an idea what it might be?
Yeah, well, I could. Gene, tell me about where you are.
I'm in Forest Hills.
Forest Hills. And
Municipal Park.
Yeah, are the cones very small?
Pretty small.
Yeah, let me say, are they about 3 inches long?
Yeah, about like that.
So I think you have a short leaf. Is the bark very, very red?
I don't remember whether it's very red or not, but they're not It's kind of coarse looking, best I remember.
Yeah.
I'm not outside right now, but it's been here a long time. I'm just curious. It's been here for years. I just wonder what it
is. So there's two possibilities, and then I'm going to say two possibilities. Well, three. And one is slash pine, one is short leaf pine, and one is cherry bark pine. And I think the way we're going to be able to tell the difference is the bark. If you go out and you look at the bark, and the bark doesn't look like typical pine tree bark, it's not in big plates, it kind of looks kind of like, it looks like a cherry tree bark, a little bitty plates.
I'm going out the door now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not red or anything like that. It looks like regular old pine bark to me.
The regular old pine bark. Now, So what you want to do is look carefully at that bark, and if you see any little craters, and I mean they're teeny tiny craters, just like about the size of a pinhead. Do you see any craters on the bark that look
I
like
see
little
some big thick ones in there? It's a real thick bark.
Yeah.
I don't see any. It's got crevices.
Yeah,
crevices.
So I think what you're looking at is a loblolly. I think it's a loblolly pine.
Big one, I know that.
Yeah, and it's a big one, and they do get very big, and they can be very nice at times. They're not the longest lived of the pines, but they're very beautiful and very nice. I think it's loblolly. Now, Gene, here's what you can do, and we're going to run out of time. But you send me next week when the show's on, send me a picture of that pine and send me a close up of the bark. And we'll figure it out. Okay.
I'll see if I can figure that out because I'm 79 years old this month. I doubt very seriously I feel safe got a damn picture. But anyway.
Well, get a nephew or something to do it for you.
Okay.
Grandchild.
I'll see if I can do this.
Yeah.
All right, appreciate it, man.
All right, Gene, thank you. Have we got time for one more caller here, Charlie? Oh, we got to do this fast. Carol?
Yes.
So this is such
my question was what to plant in my little acre forest.
Yeah, and it's such a big question that we're not going to be able to do it all this week. But, you know, you're not going to be able to do a lot of vegetables because vegetables need a lot of sunlight. And
okay.
So I wouldn't do that. You probably are going to need to thin that forest out. It is.
I plan to.
Yep. And so next week when you call back, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what to thin out. But Carol, you can help me if you can take a few pictures of that forest. Just take a few characteristic pictures of what's there as best you can and text them to me at this number.
Okay.
The number you called, and that'll help me to visualize what you're working with. Do it from several angles, and then we can talk about what to thin and how to thin it and what can go under it.
Okay, it is a lot of sun. It's dappled sun, know, as it comes in at different angles during the day. So it's not a solid, shady place.
Good. And that's good. And in general, I can tell you it's the lower trees that cast the most shade. The trees that cast the most shade are the trees that have the lowest branches. So it's the smallest trees that actually are the most limiting. So you want it.
I have just a few of those. It's mostly tall, slender things that I'm going to clear.
Okay, so send me some pictures and send me some pictures of the canopy so I can get a sense of what you got. Sounds like you may have some pines. Do you have pines in there?
They're around the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily.
And it sounds like a lot of oaks. The oaks are very difficult to work with, I'll tell you.
Even though they're slender, wispy things, and those are the things I'm going to be clearing out.
That's right, and that's good. That's good. So if they're wispy and oaks, clear them out. That's a good thing. But send me some pictures, and let's work through it. And it's very easy to do. You can just text them to this phone number, and then I'll have a sense of your forest, and we can help work you through it.
Excellent.
So Carol's got a little area that she wants to plant. Got a lot of trees there. And it raises all of those interesting questions about what do you do? What do you do for plants in shade? How do you make plants in shade work? And you know, plants are green, and they're green for a reason, and it ain't because they like shade. It's because they love sun, and you've got to keep the sun from being toxic. And you also have to reduce the heat, but it's the nighttime heat in our climate that is the biggest problem. So we're going to talk about how to think about that, how to deal with that next week. Next week, Carol is going to send me pictures, and I'm going to be able to talk to her specifically about what to thin out and how to thin things out. There's kind of a pattern to it, and you'll get that rhythm to it, and you'll begin to understand it. Whew. Plant your tomatoes, folks. It's time.